Free tourism, says a listener. A big part of the problem regarding tourism in West Donegal is the signage. It is all in Irish and no one other than the locals have a clue where they're going. It's our national language, but if we want tourists, we need dual language signs, as is the case in the rest of the county. I don't agree with you on this one, if it's okay, and I mean that with absolute respect, and it doesn't mean you're wrong and I'm right. But if I go to another country, I don't want it Englishized or whatever it is for me. I have no problem going to another country, if I could get to one for that matter, a foreign country, and I think it's on me to figure out where I'm going. I'd probably use Google Maps anyway. I think, particularly in the Gaeltacht, you know, why should we have bilingual signs? And I think really those coming here want to sort of immerse themselves in the culture a bit as well. And I respectfully don't fully agree with you. The amount of people who think it's easy to rip off the government because they anecdotally saw one dole dodger working for cash under the table is unreal. No one is landing and getting 10k for just stepping off the plane or boat and then fecking off somewhere else. Grow up and think for once. Just because you know are a dole scammer, which have always existed, getting an extra 200 from the government doesn't mean it's an easy rip-off for that much money. Get off Facebook, put down the red rad tabloids, and read some actual literature, people, please. Early Ward, how are you getting on?
Good, good. How are you?
Good to have you in. How are you keeping?
Very good, yeah. The last 2 months, as you might know yourself, has been an absolute whirlwind, but I've got to experience stuff that I never thought that I would.
Yes, and Ellie Ward is the 2025 Mary from Dunloe. What was the experience like for you?
It was amazing. The week itself was so good. Like, getting to experience such an amazing time and getting to have 14, 15 new friends is just amazing. Like, every single one of the girls were just fabulous.
And that's not a trope. That's a real thing. You build up bonds, don't you?
Yeah, like living with girls, 16 girls, you thought would be absolute mayhem, and having to share a room with these girls was, I just thought that I would be very closed off about it. But no, like, I've made friendships to last a lifetime with these girls, and just like, we've kept in touch so much over the last few months, which means a lot to me. And yeah, we're even going to Edinburgh in December together, which is great.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And it really is, the whole Mary from Dunloe thing, obviously it's a community thing, it's beyond the community, it's got, you know, national, international tension, but the women involved in it are very much in control in terms of, you know, using a platform, a global platform between, you know, between the you know, social media coverage and Tina G streaming, etc. You know, and we're going to be talking a little bit about a song that you'll release, which I'm delighted that you are doing so. But this was about, you know, you used your platform to raise awareness of mental health, for an example. Other girls used the platform in other ways.
Yeah. So a lot of us girls were very involved in social media this year. It was very apparent from the start that we'd use social media as kind of a platform to get to know each other and to share our stories before we'd even got to like meet each other on the week. So having that as a platform to get to know them before was brilliant, and then being able to continue sharing what I've done, like the day after the festival I went to the Mean Across show and went to Dunloe Hospital, which was great because before I'd even become the Mary from Dunloe, I'd done my placement in Dunloe Hospital.
Yeah, so you're returning with the sash and the crown.
Yeah.
Say, look what I've done.
Yeah, so it was kind of a full circle moment in that way. And then being able to record this song and share it online for everyone to hear and to have it as like my kind of contribution to suicide prevention and things like that, it was
and
great.
It's so important that it's someone of your age that's talking about it, that is releasing this. And I mean this with no disrespect, but, you know, you hear a message more from someone you can relate to. So young girls, young boys, right? With the best will in the world, if I was here talking about to a 35-year-old about mental health, you know, like a 17, 18-year-old or 19 or 20-year-old, but they might say, well, this person doesn't get me. They don't understand what my life is like, right? Mm-hmm. But you do. And I think that's why it's even more significant that you're reaching a whole demographic of people that sometimes might not feel talked about. Talked to. They're talked about a lot, but not talked to.
Yeah, so I feel definitely in this day and age with social media and stuff, like I talked about it in such a positive light there a few minutes ago, but having it as such a prevalent part of our life at the minute, it is a burden, and it's a burden that a lot of the older generation don't understand. And I feel myself that it has its negatives along with its positives. One just, being mental health.
Yeah, and just in relation to that, and we can tease that out a bit more. You see, for someone like me, like I remember getting my first mobile phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the first mobile phones. And then I remember the advent of various social medias. I wasn't that interested in Bebo or some of the early incarnations, but then obviously got on the likes of Twitter and now X and Facebook and Snapchat and TikTok and all that kind of stuff. But someone like me could say, well, you know, switch the phone off, right?
Yeah.
It's a choice. And it is always a choice. But you and those coming behind you were born into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a different conversation. So yeah. In terms of how you can promote yourself, promote your career, promote your music, whatever it might be, right, it's inextricably linked. You know, it's not like me where I could say, well, I'm putting my foot. You can, right? Don't get me wrong. But it's different because you've been born into this technology. It's like someone born today will never understand how people existed without artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, and I think mm-hmm. we need to understand that as adults, that it's easy to say, just don't do it. But that's not how it works when you're born into a technology, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And you can hear as many positive comments online as you want, but one negative comment does impact you a lot more than how many positive comments you want to give out. And yeah, as you said, like the older generation will be like, turn your phone off, whatever. But that's our connection to the world.
Mm. It's how you communicate. It's definitely how you get news. It's how you get information. It's how you share information. When mm-hmm. was the last time you watched a TV program? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You sat down and go, I must watch. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You'll watch it on demand. You'll stream it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not sitting down. I'm not saying all young people are the same, but I know my boys, they don't watch scheduled television.
No.
They simply don't watch it. They watch whatever they want on demand.
Mm-hmm.
They're massive football fans, but they will see no issue in watching, you know,
highlights.
A minute and 30 seconds of highlights on TikTok, and they can talk about it as if they watched it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't feel they have to watch the whole game. So it's snippets, it's snapshots.
Yeah, it's a completely different world.
Mm.
And yeah, the older generation just don't really understand. So that's why
I've just spent 10 minutes telling you how I understand.
I know.
I mean, some of the older generation. I'm trying
sorry,
to be young and relative here and understanding.
But yeah, I feel like at this present minute,
yeah.
I'm going to call it a pandemic.
Yeah.
Of young people's mental health issues, and them two amazing women that were in earlier speaking about all the services that they provide.
Mm.
And like today there's been so many highlights of like, it's brilliant to see how yous are sharing services that are available to people.
What do we do, Ellie, though? Because I was talking to a lady, Sophie Swaps, yesterday. Sophie Morris, her name is. And do you know what she does? She goes into supermarkets, right? And if there's an unhealthy bread, she says, well, this is a better bread. If there's an expensive ketchup, she says it. And she gets dogs abuse online, you know, from anonymous accounts.
Mm.
All she's saying is how you swap one ketchup for another.
Yeah.
And I'm not in any way saying it's not significant, right? But how do you stop it? You know, how do you... There are people that sit in their basements or whatever, and I think they get pleasure from thinking that they might be upset, and particularly women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely a demographic of people like becoming like thinking misogyny. I'm going to say it's misogyny.
It's nine times. Now listen, there's always been a bit of, you know, girl on girl jealousy, boy mm-hmm. boy. That's it. That's actually, you can deal with that. That's kind of normal, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you get ahead, people might always, there's some people who want to pull you back, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
That's always been there.
Yeah.
It's this pleasure or kick or whatever it might be that people get from insulting somebody online, trying to actually hurt them on a level where they might actually hurt themselves.
Yeah.
That's what I don't get, what's going on in their heads.
Mm-hmm. And it's always anonymous. You just have to remember that it's always anonymous. These people get a rise out of watching you fall, basically. So I feel people just have to remember that it's only because these people think you're doing better than them.
But as you say, that you can get 50 great comments,
yeah.
But the one, that's the one that, it's like a sports person, you can win 50 matches, but the one that bothers you might be the one you lose, and
yeah.
It's a human psyche. But look, some, Ween, you aren't going to sort it out now.
No, nope.
But I think what we can do is make sure that, because you can feel, and we talked about isolation with the two ladies you referenced, Jessica and Marie, you know, you can feel very isolated. When I, you know, I didn't enjoy school, but when I left school, that was it. Until I went back to school the next day, I didn't have the bullying in my pocket, or I didn't have it in my bedroom at night, you know?
Yeah.
So it's reaching 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds, people in their early 20s, where they actually feel they can speak out or understand the value of life. The older you get, Ellie, the more you want to live. It's a funny situation, right? But the mm-hmm. younger you are, maybe you don't get everything about that. Right, so how much planning went into you singing Dermot Kennedy's Let Me In on the night?
A lot of planning, to be honest. A lot of background planning.
Yeah.
With me and my PA, I'm going to call her, my Aunt Aoife. So me and her had discussed this kind of behind closed doors. She was doing a lot of things with me, like prepping me for my interview. She was the Kildare Mary in 2014, so she knew kind of how it ran. And there was a lot of like, I wanted to do something that represented Dunlow as a community and the surrounding communities, being the Dunlow Mary and being so involved in the community itself. And I'd noticed, as I said before, it's a pandemic of mental health issues, not just young, as we'd been speaking about before, but with the older generation as well. There's a brilliant service in Dunlow called Gemma's Legacy of Hope, which had been set up because unfortunately a man had lost his wife to her battles with mental health and was left with two kids, a daughter and a son, who he didn't really know who to go for counselling. So he set up this charity himself. And I thought that because I had seen so much devastation and loss and grief, that I would just shine a light on the demographic and mental health issues that were going on in our local community, and just show people that there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is a door, there's a place where you're happy, and you just need to knock on the doors.
Yeah, indeed, you're right. You're going to sing it.
I am. Yes.
A cappella.
I am.
Why? I mean, like, I've heard you sing. You're a great singer, but I mean, you know, you don't make things easy for yourself.
I really don't. I love a challenge.
Evidently. Before we get to that, you know, during the whole week, obviously, you expressed, you know, confidence in yourself, but you seem to have even grown in confidence in yourself through this experience. Am I picking that up right? Do you feel more sort of?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Like, this is an experience where it's once in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 year. I have things that have pushed me out of my comfort zone, and like interviews that I'd done before the festival had even started. Like, I did an interview with Oliver Callan on RTE, and the interviews with yous and all the judges.
Oh, and G and all the rest. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like I have events coming up that I just need to like push myself out, speak to everyone. Like this weekend, we have a charity ball with Anna Gallagher, the Donegal Town Mayor. It's a ball in aid of Donegal Hospice and the Donegal Town Hospital. Anna sadly lost her husband to cancer 3 years ago. He was a proud Dunlow man, which is why it's so prevalent for us as the Dunlow Mary or the Mary from Dunlow Committee to support this.
Brilliant. I think that, and what a great representative you are of the community and the compassion and the words you choose. It's beyond your years, Ellie, and I don't want to sound patronising. But also to, you know, you've got other trips. New York's coming up, is it? Are you going to New York?
Yeah, so we have been busy planning a few things that are coming up. So I have London in November, so we have that all booked and planned. And there's a few family members coming with me. And then the highlight of even the night of me winning the Crowning Cabaret was finding out I get to go to New York. So I grasped that with two hands.
Yeah, why not? That's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's such a great experience to have now as part of the Mary from Dunlow, and to be able to branch out to New York and keep our connections.
Before we get to the music, No harm reflecting on Gavin.
Yes.
Gavin, don't kill me. Gavin and Pat and all the people behind the scenes that keep the show running, the girls that look after mm-hmm. you and what have you. I mean, it's astonishing the amount of organisation goes into that event and for it to run off so smoothly, mm-hmm. so successfully. It's astonishing, isn't it? I mean, those people are amazing.
It's something that they put their whole heart and soul into and they reap the rewards for it. This year was the best Mary from Dunlow I've seen in the longest time. And I kind of thought myself that it was only because I was involved in it. But when you see so many like positive comments coming out of it and like they've already started planning next year's.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I would say they're also planning. Yeah, you just said that. Also planning the 60th.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously now you're a recording artist. The only thing left now at this point is a duet with Daniel.
Do you know what? Me and Daniel, we need it. It needs to happen.
Well, he's got next year off, right? So we can get in the studio.
He can get in the studio.
Yeah, he's taking.
We'll get him on Dermot Kennedy.
Dermot Kennedy, something else, isn't he? We met him down at he was at the President's House, whatever it's called, Iris and Ircton.
It is.
Yeah, and he's really lovely fella.
He's
really timid, not timid, but he's not cocky or nothing.
Not that I've ever met him.
Yeah, well,
would be an absolute dream.
All right, Evelyn says you are just amazing, Ellie Ward. We're so proud of you in Dunlow. That's out of Evelyn McLaughlin watching us. Lorraine, Suzanne Hanlon, such an amazing young lady. Katrina McGeehan, good girl Ellie. Oh, these all can't be your auntie.
That's my auntie.
Is
Katrina.
It which one? Is
Katrina.
Auntie Anager, your manager, is it?
No, my momager is out there.
And who's getting over to London?
Aoife.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry,
right,
Katrina.
So, are you standing up, sitting down, or what are you doing?
I'll be fine sitting.
Okay, right. Okay, so this is Ellie Ward. We can do that afterwards. I want to let people know where they can listen to the studio version of it. But this is a Dermot Kennedy song. It's a wonderful song, actually. It's called Let Me In. And Ellie has released it to raise awareness of mental health for September. And obviously, listen, that was part of a month, right? But we're into... Every month is a mental health awareness month, so it's still incredibly, incredibly relevant. So whenever you're ready, Ellie, let me in.
In Oaken's Bay, oh, I could have stayed and never went home. It might have been brief, but at least I was free from all of my ghosts. They live in my head like reflections on water that only come once. I still haven't learned deceptions in the cinematic version of love. But I can't get enough these days. Oh, the world doesn't sing to me quite how it used to see. This life is a touch too much for me? Maybe that's meant for me. I know there's a room where I'm happy, but I can't find my way to the door. Tell me who wins the war between my heart and my head. I forgot what I'm suffering for. I surrender to dark when it all falls apart. At least I won't have to pretend. I know there's a room where I'm happy. Oh, let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me in. I'd give anything to change my fate. I know there's a room where I'm happy, but I can't find my way to the door. Tell me who wins the war between my heart and my head. I forgot what I'm suffering for. I surrender to dark when it all falls apart. At least I won't have to pretend. I know there's a room where I'm happy. Oh, let me in, let me in.
Sorry, I got lost in that a wee bit. Well done, Ellie. That was lovely.
Thank you very much.
Do you know what? Actually, sometimes it's nice to strip things back so you can hear the words. Mm-hmm. It's really well written, that.
Yes,
it is. So where can people hear the track that you actually recorded now? It's no harm getting a second sort of rush of interest.
Yes, so we released it as the Mary from Dunloe Committee on both the Mary from Dunloe Instagram and Facebook page. And the Ivory Sessions also, they released it. And at the beginning of the song, before the recording's played, I kind of explain in more in depth why I chose the song and why it's so prevalent to the Dunloe community, which I think is amazing to hear. And it's kind of, I devoted it to the people of Dunloe. It's not really about me in that sense. So. Okay. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, listen, enjoy Donegal Town at the weekend, London,
thank you very much.
New York, and everything that's coming in between. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. Well done. That's Ellie Ward, the 2025 Mary from Dunloe. Right. Okay, just to some of your comments coming in here, to just to remind you how you keep in touch with us. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And by the way, if you enjoyed Ellie's performance, or if you missed it, it is going to be available for you to listen back on the podcast, but also to watch back on YouTube. Right, we can go now to Nisha Dolan, Irish writer, who's currently on board the 1,000 Madeleines flotilla heading to Gaza. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Right. So tell us how things unfolded overnight or early this morning, Nisha, as Israel played its hand in disrupting this effort.
Well, the first we heard was when we were just preparing for the nightly drone watch. And this is when quite a loud drone had already started hovering above us. But we're a few days from that zone yet. And we heard that the lead boats were beginning to be intercepted, that they'd been surrounded by Israeli vessels. And the previous night, Israel had surrounded them and then retreated again, possibly some kind of psychological tactic or for initial intel. But this time it was for real. They seized the boats. They illegally abducted those inside. They've done over half the boats now, and it's continually dwindling numbers of the boats still sailing.
You are in international waters still.
Yes. And so while it still would be illegal to seize civilian vessels in this manner and arrest the people without any kind of trial, it is especially glaringly an overreach in international waters. International law enshrines our right to safe passage and to the safe delivery of our humanitarian aid, and it's no business of Israel's to try to stop it.
Is it a matter of time before your vessel is boarded, Nisha?
Realistically, yes. Of course, we must retain hope. That we are going to deliver, but we have found prepared as well.
You've been involved, obviously, in the Palestine movement for quite some time. Why did you feel it was important, A, that this flotilla was organised, but you had a place on it?
Well, I wasn't dead set on being on a boat, but I was dead set on contributing because I felt we needed an escalation from the legislative tactics that we've been following at home. And I'm not belittling those tactics because they have seen some results, but I didn't feel anymore that contacting my representatives and writing articles and speaking at protests was enough. So I thought, here's a direct action movement that's challenging Israel's blockade in a concrete way, and I'm going to offer myself for however the organisers think I'm useful. If that's on land support, so be it. If it's on a boat, so be it. And as it happened, there was a need for writers and journalists to be on board because of the protection our visibility brings. So that's why they asked me to be on a boat.
Now, I know supplies are on board, but that's not necessarily to make a difference, is it? It's to make a point.
Yes, it's both. It's material aid that is desperately needed. It's baby formula for children that are starving before they can even talk. It's medical supplies for people who are dying needlessly. And that's very real to us. It's very real what we're carrying. But equally, we are making a political point about Israel's illegal blockade on Gaza because we're not here for charity. We're here to defend Palestinian dignity and self-determination. Palestinians don't want our pity. They don't want our help if that help comes without respect for their agency. And so fundamentally, what we're defending is their right to decide who goes into their territory and what we bring.
How encouraging, if at all, was it that you were flanked at times by some, you know, European vessels? Unfortunately, I presume that them backing off then at a given point was regrettable. But did that sort of, I think that elevated the coverage, certainly anyway, of what you're trying to achieve.
Yes, and it might well have limited the force that Israel used. As far as I've heard so far, no one has been killed or seriously injured, and these were possibilities that we hadn't necessarily ruled out. So I think there was possibly some deterrence still. And more importantly, it showed that governments do respond to pressure, not always as much as we would like. And so that's why we need to keep the pressure up. And I suppose my stance and analysis on governments in terms of Palestine is that their default position is to defend the interests of Western imperialism, and that means siding with Israel. But when there's enough public pressure, they're capable of changing course, even if it's for self-interested reasons and in limited ways. And so we have to keep trying.
Can you talk to me about the attacks on the boats, what they were like, or how they actually unfolded? Because as you can imagine, this is often to a publicity war, and you know, videos were emerging of drone attacks, or what appeared to be drone attacks, and then people sort of trying to discredit that, saying it was missed fire flares and all that kind of stuff. It's an information war now as much as anything. But what was happening, or what has been happening, in terms of attacks on the flotilla?
It's a funny sort of information war, because a lot of the footage shows a burning object flying directly from the sky. So it's very difficult to spin that as anything other than a drone attack.
People will try.
Yeah, they will try, of course, but they will also try to deny that there's a genocide when from the beginning hundreds of Israeli public figures said that they wished to starve Palestinians, qua Palestinians. And so in terms of drone attacks, the main risk is fire. And so when we're on drone watch, it's not because we think that we can stop them. See the drones for very long before they attack. The ones you see for a while are surveillance drones. The attack drones tend to come quite suddenly, and so it's not that we think we can intervene. It's that when a boat like this, fiberglass, highly flammable, takes fire, we need to be on it immediately, or else our lives are at risk. So it's mainly to put the fire out, and that's the main risk that they pose.
And that has been happening regularly, yeah? Objects being dropped from drones with a view to, you know, disabling the boats?
Yes, there were two waves of drone attacks so far. The first was two boats being struck in Tunisia with damage that was reparable. And then the second wave came in around the territorial waters that we're now in. So that's why we've been so vigilant. And these involved sort of the milder spectrum of chemical attacks, right down to damaging the engine of a boat, I believe. And so it's sabotage. And crucially, it's not aimed at us. It's aimed at Palestinians. If we were carrying aid for anyone else, we would be left alone. And so it shows Israel's determination to starve people because of where they were born.
Okay, so the Israelis put out some information yesterday suggesting that it was Hamas overseas that was funding and organising this flotilla. Just a quick word from you on relation to that.
This is what they say about anyone who attempts to help Palestinians whatsoever. And it's become so rampant at this stage that anyone who takes it seriously on the face of it is just not informed or does not wish to know the truth. The links that they have drawn in this case are unbelievably tenuous. And more to the point, this movement has been incredibly transparent. There was a very public fundraising effort. We are not attempting to incite or support any kind of violence. We are not affiliated with any political party or any group. We support the right of Palestinians to defend themselves. But in our case, it is very markedly a non-violence movement. And so any violence that equation comes from Israel.
Okay, and where are you now in terms of proximity to Gaza? Are you still, are you at this stage sort of just holding your ground, or you would have reached Gaza this morning if not interrupted? So how far are you from Gaza, and what is the plan for the next couple of hours?
The Thousand Madleens boat are actually a fair bit behind, so we're looking to reach Gaza in maybe 6 or 7 days. Could be quicker depending on various decisions we're about to make.
All right. OK. And those decisions, I'm sure, will become public when made. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's Leisha Dolan there, who's an Irish writer who's currently on board the Thousand Madleens flotilla heading to Gaza, albeit her somewhat behind those that have already been boarded. OK. You're very welcome back to the programme, and delighted to welcome onto it now Emma Fogarty, author of Being Emma, Living My Best Life with Butterfly Skin. Thanks, Emma, so much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Thank you for having me. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, whilst the number of Irish sufferers of butterfly skin, as it's known, is small, we've covered this extensively over the years and have spoken to quite a number of people. But talk to me about this disease and how it affects you, Emma.
So there's three forms of EB, and in Ireland, with all three forms, there's 300 patients with us, living with us. With my form, there's about seven of us, and it's certainly uneasy. They describe my skin as fragile as the wings of a butterfly, and that's because literally my skin can tear if I bump into somebody. So I have bandages that cover 8 centimeters of my body because I have wounds that are similar to third-degree burns.
So in terms of, it's not just the ease with which the skin breaks, presumably then its ability to replenish itself or to cure, is that also affected?
Of course, yeah, definitely. It can heal, but it can reoccur then again. So wounds, once an area breaks down, it kind of breaks down over and over again because it can't heal. It doesn't have the collagen in it to heal.
But you are flat out right. You've not let it hold you back as much as you humanly possibly cannot allow it to hold you back, Emma. I mean, that's something in you, though, isn't it? That must be just the type of person you are.
Well, I hope so. I'm certainly determined, and I think I get that from my parents. I went to college at 18. I worked in the bank for 4 years, and then I became patient ambassador for Deborah Ireland. I've been doing that now for about 15 years, and I absolutely love it. It's a role I cherish. And now I'm driving, so I love it. And you're right, I have done everything I can humanly possibly do, as you say. And last year I took part in the Dublin Marathon with Colin Farrell. So,
yeah, indeed. And you and him get on well, don't you?
Yeah, we're good friends. Yeah, we are close.
Because, you know, I mean, obviously that's a personal achievement, but yeah, you also raised almost €1 million for the Deborah Ireland organisation, which is amazing because sometimes it can be hard to get attention and funds to a condition that doesn't affect a lot of people.
That's it. We get no government funding, like zero. We get nothing. So that's the problem. So we rely heavily on the public for donations to Deborah Ireland. So, so raising €1 million was a huge achievement. And for me personally, doing the marathon, I know it was only the last 4 kilometres, but the last 4 kilometres represents the 4 decades that I've survived and lived with EB. So, yeah, it was personally, and for Deborah Ireland, it was a huge achievement.
And in relation to that, getting 240 and beyond it in and of itself is an achievement with your condition. Why is the lifespan so much shorter in how it affects you, if that makes sense, Emma?
Yeah, so with the open wounds that I have, one is very easy to get infection from that, and that can lead to sepsis. And as you know, sepsis, you can pass away even before you know you have sepsis. And secondly, skin cancer is a huge problem in EB, especially in adults. It's very easy for someone to get cancer, and I've had it twice, once when I was 25, and then I lost my left leg at 35.
Yeah, but still you continue. Obviously, like, it's like the who's who in your friends list. Obviously, Colin Farrell. You've also met Ed Sheeran as well.
I have. I've met Ed Sheeran, yeah. He's great. He's a lovely guy, really nice. And he has supported Deborah America. So he's friends with Courtney Cox. Courtney Cox's best friend has a child with EB. So he supported that. Mm. So it was amazing. And I'm very close to Johnny Sexton and a few others.
Lovely stuff. Excellent. It's a testimony to your character and your personality. Right, so now you're an author as well as a friend to the stars, right? why the book, why now? And what did you want to get out in the book, if that makes sense, Emma?
Yeah, I suppose I always dreamed of writing a book to give, I suppose, to give hope to the other patients who are living with EB. I mean, we've just talked about the achievements that I've accomplished, and they have been huge achievements because the doctor said, no, she won't do this, this and this. And I've always said, but I will. So I just wanted to show the world and the world, especially the world of EB, that I can do it. And if you are determined enough, you can jump over any obstacle that's put in your way. And trust me, I've had many obstacles put in my way. So it's been amazing. It was a real emotional roller coaster, but it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the subtitle of it's Living My Best Life. And what we go through in life is subjective, right? For you, it's butterfly skin. For somebody else, it could be grief or loss. For somebody else, it could be a disability. And it is, the inspiration comes from, you know, living our best lives, even with the challenges we might face in life.
Exactly. That's it. It is. It's living with whatever challenge. It's not just TB. As you said, it's living with any challenge. Live your best life with any challenge that comes your way, because if you feel it deep enough that you want to do something, you can achieve it. And whatever the challenge is, whatever obstacle is put in your way, and you will be happy and you will be proud of yourself for doing that.
I'm obviously, you know, medicine's often driven by money, and I just wonder, with a condition that doesn't affect as many as other conditions might, research, I wonder, is there much effort going on in research, and have there been any advances? It's obviously a very complex condition, I understand that, but are we actively working on ways to either, you know, heal people or prevent conditions worsening or whatever it might be?
Absolutely, definitely. Across the world, we're looking into cures and treatments and things. And they are coming up with treatments, certainly. Cures, I don't know, because there won't be a one-size-fits-all cure for EB, because there's so many subtypes to the three types I told you about. So, it will be hard. But there is treatments going on around the world, and Ireland is probably one of the highest funding for research in the world. So it's very amazing to say that.
Not a bit wonder with people that, like, so, you raising €1 million for crying out loud. That's going to help, isn't it?
Well, I suppose that does help a little bit for them. But yeah, that happens, you know, once every so often, you know. So, but it's great, you know, and the more public funding we have, the more we can do, you know. And again, there's more being done in Ireland, and there's loads done. And right now, at the moment, I'm using a cream, and it has birch extract in it, and I'm doing really well on it. But again, as I said, it's not a one size fits all. It might not work for the next person.
Yeah, so, but we keep coming up with things that might. Listen, Emma, it's been wonderful speaking to you. Congratulations on the publication of your book, Being Emma, Living My Best Life with Butterfly Skin. And it's for a broad audience, anyone who is facing a challenge, or perhaps maybe they need some context in their life, whatever it might be. You can get a copy of Being Emma, Living My Best Life with Butterfly Skin in all the usual places. Thank you so much for joining us, Emma. It's been wonderful chatting to you.
Thank you so much.
All right, look after yourself. Bye-bye. That is Emma Fogarty there. Is it Fogarty? Fogarty. It depends on who owns the name, how they pronounce it. But there you go. I'm going to take a break, the quarter to break. We'll come back with the weather forecast and more guests on the 9 till noon show. Among the 12 current housemates that have entered the Big Brother house, we've got Derry girl Jenny Baird, a 20-year-old makeup artist from the Brandywell area of the city. Shane Melly's with me now. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Shane. Hi, Greg. How are we?
I'm doing good. Tell us about Jenny.
Yeah, so Jenny, she has entered Big Brother now, as I'm sure everybody can see. And she's absolutely smashing it so far, so she has. Everybody, we're just so, so proud of her. And, you know, watching her every single night now in the house and seeing her, you know, get along with everybody, it's just absolutely fantastic to see. So it is.
Yeah, not forgetting where she comes from either. A few stories about Derry there too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing about Jenny. She's just a normal Derry girl. And she'll always, you know, talk about the city, and she'll always hype it up, so she'll.
Brilliant stuff. And are you seeing the Jenny that you know in there? Obviously, great crack, great storyteller, but also too, you know, doesn't necessarily, is not shy from disagreeing if someone puts it up to her. She doesn't like being told what to do.
Yeah, that's definitely the Jenny that I know anyways on the outside. One thing, about Jenny is she'll just speak her mind no matter what. And she's being 100% genuine, and that, that is herself. So just to see her every night, get how she's getting on, and just seeing her being her true self on there is just amazing to watch. We are all so, so proud of her, so we are great.
Yeah, it must be amazing, but it must be strange as well, if you know what I mean.
It is. It's strange. There's, not being able to contact her. There's no contact on there with the outside world.
How do you
So
think she's doing
it
without her
is
phone?
strange.
Shane, how do you think she's doing without her phone?
Do you know what? She said to me before she went in that, she was actually looking forward to coming off social media for, how length of time that she'll be there. So if Jenny, makes it to the final, which I do think she will, that will be 7 weeks. But I think, she will be fine without her phone. Jenny, loves speaking to people, and she gets along well with, nearly everybody that she meets. So I would say that she is getting on great without the phone, and just talking to people.
I mean, obviously, to some extent, it's a popularity contest as well, and you stand by your true self and that, and you hope that that's enough. But also, too, do you think she's going to employ any tactics, or are you seeing any tactics in there? Because she's in it to win it too, I would hope.
At the minute, it's I don't think so. It's only we're only on day three. So we're watching each night, I'm just seeing Jenny just act the way that she would act on the outside if she was having these sort of conversations if there was no cameras there. So I think she's this is 100% Jenny just being herself, and getting along with people.
Yeah, and from what
She
I've
does.
spoken to people in the past that have been on the show, you do very quickly lose awareness of the cameras. Firstly,
Of the
they're in
cameras,
corners of rooms and behind windows, but very quickly it becomes, we're human, we adapt and we just socialise as if they're not there sometimes.
I would say, Jenny probably has forgotten, that the cameras are there. But just seeing her, we all just know how genuine she is. If you know Jenny well, you'll know that this is just herself. So it really is. It's amazing to watch.
Do you think she hopes something might come from this, Shane? Because, I mean, there was at the beginning, Big Brother was a social experiment. I do note that a lot of those that are in there now already have, a decent social media following, or are influencers, or have been influencers. Do you think Jenny sees this as a springboard to something else as well?
You see, that's interesting, because we always watch Big Brother, and you see people that go under the house, that then come out and do really well, as where you have other people then that go on and maybe they just go back to like their normal job. But the thing about Jenny, at the minute, social media is already her job. On the outside, she does social media for a living. So I definitely think that, this is really going to take off for her now. And this could be the start of, new doors opening up for her.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's about what she does with it, because, to be on ITV across Britain and Ireland, it is it's a huge springboard. So it's what you do with it afterwards. All right, Shane. Well, listen, enjoy it. Hopefully she sticks about. It'd be lovely to have a local interest right into the end. You're probably mad to get your mate back, but still glad to see you're stuck in there.
I know, I
Yeah.
know.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Thank you, Shane Melly there, who is supporting his friend Jenny Baird from Derry, who is in the Big Brother house. I just haven't, I'm not a snob. I watch some amount of crap on the telly. I just haven't watched that for a few series, and I don't feel I have the time, if the truth be told. Hey, tomorrow night we're or tomorrow morning we're heading down to Kilkenny for the IMRO Radio Awards, because we've been shortlisted. The show, us programmes have been short. Have to be careful. The show has been shortlisted for a couple of awards. Oisin Kelly's also in the hat for Sports Broadcaster of the Year. So we're heading down to that. We're really pleased to have been nominated or shortlisted in the first instance, because there are hundreds of considerations, and we've been shortlisted in three, which is fantastic. And we don't you know, we're not in every single category as well, so it's a particularly good achievement for us here. We're all really excited, and we want to let you know as soon as we find out. As I say, it's a long shot, but who's to say we might not come back with some gold? We're up against some tough competition between the likes of, you know, Liveline and the Stephen Nolan Show and others as well. So the competition is tight. We shall see. But we'll let you know on social media anyway. We'll let you know straight away if we win. You might have to wait till Monday to find out if we if we're not successful. But Caroline, you says you have to put it out into the world. You know, you have to be positive. So let's do that. So that's tomorrow night. So Donald's going to be in for me tomorrow. And we will make our way down to Kilkenny. It's a long drive, isn't it? And I think the thing starts at 6:30 and we should know mid-evening what the story is. But anyway, it'll be great to get down and say hello to people and stuff as well. So looking at some of your comments here. We look forward to welcoming Ellie Ward, her family and friends to New York City for St. Patrick's Day. Great interview on Highland Radio from your New York Mary from Dunloe Committee, Anne-Marie, Eileen, Sean, Veronica, Mary, Astoria, Queens. Now, obviously, you might want someone there from the media, folks. So I think it hasn't been done for a while. If you want me to go, I'll come out. You cover the costs and I'll make sure of plenty of publicity. No, Ellie's earned that and I'm delighted for her and her family. Re Gaza, can any country in the world actually stop Israel? Ireland supported Ursula von der Leyen, and in turn, she supported arms to Israel. Ireland speaks at both sides. Well, can anyone, any country stop Israel? Of course. Why aren't they? You tell me. I don't know. Well, I have my ideas, but of course the Americans could stop Israel in a heartbeat. Israel can't look after itself or defend itself without the backing of the United States. What does the United Israel have on the United States? What do they have on Donald Trump? I don't know. But of course countries could stop. Sure, we could stop them flying through Shannon, or we could stop trading with Gaza. There's lots of things could be done if countries wanted to do it. But words are cheap, you know. You can throw words out there, look like you're doing something, and nothing ever to come of it. A caller says, I have an 8-month-old baby and just recently she's developed a really bad skin condition and is itching non-stop. I've been to the GP several times and went to see a paediatrician yesterday, but everyone says they don't know what it is. I need to see a dermatologist, but the earliest I can get an appointment is January. There's no way the child can cry in pain till then. Does anyone know of a dermatologist that can see us before that? We've no issue paying privately. So you can imagine they're just very interested in relieving that child's discomfort. I can only imagine what it's like to have an 8-month-old baby who's got uncomfortable skin and is crying and itching and you're there and you feel helpless. So listen, they don't mind going private. What can they do? They've been to the GP. They do have an appointment for January. But I mean, the baby, what they're enduring, but also to everyone else in the house, it's very, very distressing. Nothing more distressing than a child crying and you can't help it. So does anyone have any advice? Does anyone have details of a dermatologist, even one that might see them privately? They don't mind. They just want their child to feel better. A lot of sympathy for you, and I hope you get sorted, and please let us know if you do. Okay, that's where we leave it on the 9 till noon show for today. Donald's in with you tomorrow, but all the usual you would expect on a Friday. I'll be back with you on Monday.